You are about to listen to an episode of The Cypher before it was The Cypher. For our first 75 episodes, we were known as Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, and we had a slightly different format. In all honesty, our production value and sound quality today is much improved from these early episodes. That said, the content is so great that these shows are a valuable part of our archive. If you want more information about our transition, make sure to check out episode 76 with Ritz, which was our first one under the new name. To keep up to date on everything involving The Cypher, visit us online at thecyphershow.com or find us on iTunes. And now, without further ado, here's The Cypher before The Cypher.
Seen Rob Bass do It Takes Two in there the first time he ever did that. Rap's New Generation I seen in there. I seen Bismarck and Sandu Jane in there. So, you know, the rooftop was that spot.
Welcome to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. I'm your host, Same Old Sean. This week we have our long-promised conversation with Sadat X. Since debuting with the group Brand Nubian in 1989, Sadat has been one of rap's most original and creative voices. His work, both solo and with Brand Nubian, has brought us countless classics, including Slow Down, Punks Jump Up to Get Beat Down, and of course, one of my personal favorite albums, Brand Nubian's debut, One for All. We talked to Sadat at the Rap Genius office in Brooklyn. Genius.
I'm glad to be here.
Same old Sean here with legendary Sadat X.
Sadat X.
Excellent. Thanks for coming by, hanging out.
Yeah.
Just got his Rap Genius verified account hooked up.
Definitely. I feel good too, man. It's a great thing, man. It's like new. It's good. It's definitely good.
Excellent. So why don't we start by kind of going back to the beginning?
All right.
Back in you know, Brand Nubian, in the early 90s, you guys were on Elektra, but specifically you were part of this whole group of artists that Dante Ross assembled.
Yeah.
Right? You got Pete Rock and CL Smooth, mm-hmm. KMD, Leaders of the New School. What was the atmosphere like in Elektra with all those guys kind of around at the same time?
Well, it was good, and it was a new era, man. It was like, you know, Pooh, I had a previous relationship with Dante because, you know, Dante was that Tommy Boy at first. And he was trying to sign Pooh Wah. Pooh Wah was in another group called Masters of Ceremony. And, you know, he basically brought us to the fold. I had moved up to New Rochelle from the Bronx. Lord Jamal was there all the time. You know, Pooh Wah was being that he was a little older than us. He was like the New Rochelle icon that we looked up to. Like, when Pooh Wah was doing the show, he was always fly because he was the one that was going downtown, coming back with the Nike suits and this and that. So, you know, they was the one, like, if you want to get on, he was the one you got to see. So, you know, basically how Brand Nubian started was, I was a solo artist, Lord Jamal was a solo artist, and Pooh Wah was producing us both. So we'd have a session, and he'd do like 2 hours with me, 2 hours with Jamal. And we went to the studio with on Allerton Avenue, Jazzy J Studio, Strong City. He made a beat and was like, y'all should get on this beat. And we got on the beat and rhymed on it, and it sounded good, and we just took it from there.
So Jazzy J was instrumental in forming.
Oh yeah, Jazzy J, like Jazzy J is like a Brand Nubian guru. Like, plus, like, just Jay, man, with his wealth of knowledge and you know, just helping us, man, and giving us words of wisdom, even till this day, man. Like, Jay is to be he's revered, you know. I'm like, he was one of the people that was instrumental in Brand Nubian coming together.
And obviously the teachings of the Nation of Gospel have been a big part of your work since the beginning. How'd you get introduced to them?
Well, basically, you know, I always seen the gods from little, coming up, being in the Bronx, seeing the gods, and just coming up and being with our Brand Nubian, like Lord Jamar, you know, very instrumental in that, you know what I'm saying? He's always swift with his math and on his P's and Q's. The God Sincere was also another person that brought me into the light. And, just letting me know myself, man, like coming into myself and feeling confident with myself, man. And, you know, the brothers of the Nation, the gods and earths was always, they were standing upright and they was positive. And they was always like, yo, you can be whatever you want to be, regardless of what they say. And that message captured me as a youth.
Definitely. That's, did you
You were out in the Bronx by the time you went to high school, right?
Yeah, I was in New Rochelle by that time.
Okay, because when I talked to AG, you talked about going to the so-called school of the gods.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of AG, like, AG is one of my closest friends, my main man. Like, I didn't play video games back then with A. And, like, A, like, me and A, like, he's, A is, like, special to me, no doubt. Like, that's my main man, AG.
Yeah, definitely. Moving boroughs for a second, on your new album, On the K, you have this tribute to Brooklyn. You mentioned the Albee Square Mall specifically, which I know is a favorite location of a lot of rappers. What are some of your favorite memories of the old Albee Square Mall?
Well, first of all, the Albee Square Mall was like Gladiator School. Like, that's why I said, like, a lot of, like, and I would never wanted to go back to them days. Maybe, well, in a way I would, but, like, for you to go to Albee Square Mall back then, like, okay, they had the stores in there, and that was the spots, one of the spots in there you went to go get your gold teeth done. So when you went to Albee Square Mall, you was down downtown Brooklyn. So that means, first of all, you was dealing with the dudes from Fort Greene. They was right there, so they was automatically claiming that as theirs. Then you had dudes from Gowanus and the other places over there. They was like, well, it's only taking us about 5-10 minutes to get over there. So it was an amalgamation of Brooklyn tough guys, East New York, Brownsville. So for you to come from another borough to even step foot in Albee Square Mall, you had to be a gladiator. And it was just like, That was a time when hip hop, it wasn't safe, but it was such the lure that you were willing to bygone that. Like, I want to go so bad that I'm willing to pass the safety issues, and I just want to go and Albee Square Mall, one of the places you go. And if somebody felt you wasn't thorough enough, they'd be like, well, yo, give me yours. And that's how it was.
Now, I was reading an interview with you where you talked about your influences, and you mentioned one group that I hadn't really heard of. I guess probably because they existed sort of pre-recording, was the Fantastic Romantic Brothers.
Oh, yeah. The Fantastic Romantic MCs, boy. They was like Whip a Whip and all them dudes like that, man. I mean, that was like Cold Crush Fantastic. That was like the battle back and forth. And they was like, Fantastic was just so fly. Like, they harmonized. It's like how they would do harmonize, come back and forth. And they was like one of the people that I really studied them. And I would say Fantastic and Kaz. And I've told Grandmaster Kaz this many times. I probably studied Kaz more than anybody in this whole world. Just studied like his movements and this and that from a young dude. Like, I remember being young, going with my uncles and places, like, and just seeing him and Cold Crush and Romantic Five and just studying these dudes.
In the Concerto in X Minor, jumping forward to the first Grand Union album, you talk about how, and this kind of ties into stuff you were saying about Albee Square Mall, how New York was a powder keg back then, right? This was a time of, like, Yusef Hawkins, the Day of Outrage, Tawana Brawley.
Yeah.
What was it like to be in the city then?
It was rugged, man, because, like, New York was, it was still kind of ethnically divided. Like, it was still, like, if you went in Bay Ridge, you might see the Italian dudes outside with the baseball bats. Or if you went in, like, this area over here, like, I was in the Bronx. I went to Salesian High School. So I was dealing with a lot of, like, Italian dudes from Arthur Avenue and this and that. Like, hey, move, man. You know, like, so I went to that type of area. Like, New York was a powder keg. And, like, it was racial, but then it wasn't racial because I was cool with all of them. And it was like a, you know, it was different events, like the Yusef Hawkins event set it off. Then when the guy stabbed the Jewish guy in Crown Heights. So you had different events, man, that was structuring the times. Then you had movies that was coming out, like Spike was making all the movies back then, like The School Days, this and that and all that. And it was like a real time. And a side note, I don't, Spike, man, I don't know what's the problem that you got with the Django and Quentin Tarantino. I seen the movie and I wasn't offended by it. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know, Spike. I love Spike to death, but it seemed like when you don't make the joint, you get hypocritical of it, man. It was a good movie. Quentin Tarantino, maybe you mad that he made it, or maybe some of the lyrics, the N-word or nigger word or whatever. And I mean, but that's Quentin, and that's what he does. It's a shock value. I love the movie, so I ain't got no problem with it. Okay, now we're going to rewind and go back in. Now, but at the time, you know, that was just New York. It was real powder keg then.
Yeah, definitely. There was something I was wondering about, since, you know, your first solo album, you've used the cowboy concept a lot, the you know, wild cowboy and all that stuff. What's your attraction to the idea of the cowboy? Like, how do you relate to that idea?
See, like, that's what I tell people. Like, when you are, when I say wild cowboy, believe me, it's far from the Western cowboy. I tell people, Google wild cowboys. Just all you gotta do is put wild cowboys and then drugs. And then you're gonna see something come up that say Washington Heights, Sepulveda, Nelson Sepulveda, and these names. These, my grandmother lived on 157th Street in Riverside Drive. 714, 157th Street, 714 was the first place that they came up with crack. They first came up, it was the baseballs. They had the baseballs at first. And I remember that, I was a little dude. They had the baseballs at first, and that's what they were selling. Then they started whopping it up, and it came to crack from there. But them dudes was the first dudes that, like, I seen over there. They had a gang called the Jerry Curl Gang. Google that, Jerry Curl Gang. It was right there, 714. Then in, you had Nelson Sepulveda and his brother up there. Those was the original Wild Cowboys. If you Google that, you're going to see all that come up. And I took that kind of from that, not in a tribute, but being that I was in that area and this and that, and that's how basically it came about.
Okay, excellent. I wanted to jump to in Stages and Lights, right, in that tune. You talk about all the different haircuts you had over the years.
Yeah.
So, of the low one, the baldy, and the fade, which was your favorite, and which one kind of made you, are there any haircuts you got over the years where you kind of look back at pictures and you're like, man, I can't believe it.
Yeah, well, one time I had a slope cut where I looked at that and I was like, yeah, I was bugging that day. But I kind of mixed my box because at one point I had a high box and it was nice and it was high. It was kind of like Iman Shupert from the Knicks now. It was nice and high. My man Rob G from Nurcell, Macadocious, love out to Rob G. He cut it and kept me going. But it seemed like once I went to the bald and I cut it, my hair would never grow that high again, yo. I just lost the growth power, but I loved my box, man.
Nice. On that same tune, you talk about New York radio. You talk about Kid Capri and Brucey B. Memories of listening to that?
Oh, man. But I mean, who don't know Kid Capri? Like Pooch Capri, man, is like one of the forefathers of it, man. One of the dudes that showed the world how to do it. Not just New York, but the world. Understand, he was one of the forefathers of that, you know what I'm saying, where getting that Kid Capri tape, that was like having a piece of gold. When you had a Kid Capri joint, especially when it first came out, that was gold in here. And Brucey B was the father also, in the club, the Rooftop. People don't even know about the Rooftop. The Rooftop is right there on 155th Street, right across from Rutgers. It's a parking lot right there right now. Seen Rob Bass do It Takes Two in there the first time he ever did that. Rap's New Generation I seen in there. I seen Bismarck and Shandu Jane in there. So, you know, the Rooftop was that spot. Rich Porter was in the Alpo. You know what I'm saying? Boss dudes like that. My man Boy George. Understand that.
Wow. So on your new record, you have the song Cancer. Very, very moving song. You know, your experiences with the disease with people you know had it. Can you maybe talk a little bit about writing that?
Well, first of all, if y'all have ever seen Brand Nubian videos and you've seen the video, I'll Keep Holding On. My man Star, who sang the chorus, he died of bone cancer last year. And you know, it's like, I love my man Star and I miss my man Star like tremendously, man. And the thing is, he didn't find out he had bone cancer until it was too late. You understand? And a lot of times I see in the urban hoods, it's hard for dudes, man. A lot of times I've been a victim of it. You don't have Medicaid set up. And basically in my hood, the only time you really go into the doctor is unless a bone is sticking out of your arm or unless you're physically unable to walk. And it's like, we need something to have people aware, man, that they need to go take these checkups and this and that because, you know, cancer, man, is a beast of a disease. My grandfather died from brain cancer, and when it has a hold of you, it's such a beast, man. And it's like, I wish there was more awareness in the hoods of it, man, because dudes, man, like I said, we don't go to the doctor unless you like pressed to really have to go, man. And it's like, man, if we had just a little more awareness, and I wanted to bring that out, man, like for us to get some awareness of that.
Speaking of awareness, I know that you've had a large part of your life has been mentoring children,
yeah.
both in teaching special education, coaching basketball, stuff like that. How did you first get involved in mentoring kids, and why has it become such a major part of what you do?
Well, coming up in New York City, I played basketball, and I was part of a program called Riverside Church. The original Riverside Church with Mr. Lorch, Ernie Lorch was the founder of that. Different coaches that went through that, but I was with Riverside Church. Through Riverside Church, you've had players like Walter Berry, Chris Mullen, Kenny Anderson. Kenny Anderson played with us. Speaking of Kenny Anderson, Chin. Kenny Anderson played with us. He was in 9th grade. We was in 12th grade. He was already the best player on the team by then, by far. But, players that I've coached come through there, Ron Artest, Elton Brand, Lamar Odom, those dudes have come through the program. But, I was originally a basketball dude, and I came through there. I went to college on basketball scholarship. And that was my first, real endeavor coming through. And I just always been involved with kids, coaching, just mentoring them, because I had certain mentors that I came up with, man, that showed me the path, and I just wanted to follow along them lines.
And I read in interviews and heard from folks who know you that you're an extremely early riser.
Oh, yeah.
Up by 5 or 5:30 in the morning.
First of all, I was mad at myself this morning because I got to the gym at 7 o'clock, and I was like, damn it, I'm usually there. Like, somehow, like, my body's clock didn't wake up this morning, and I woke up late. I'm usually there at 5 o'clock when my partner was there, and he was already mad at me. Like, yo, I'm getting ready to leave. But I like to get up early, man. Like, for some reason, I just like to get up early, go to the gym, because when I go to the gym early, it gives me a focus of what I got to do for the day. You know, it's a time when I can really focus on getting my thoughts together and getting my day in order, and that's why I like to do that. And plus, that's from the nation of gods and earth, physically and mentally. You understand? Like, back in the days, when earth was first created, you had people like Moses and these people. How old they said Moses was when he died? Like 800 and these different ages like that? I'm like, wow. And now we're dying at 80, 90. So I believe that as long as your mind is right and your body is right, that gives you the chance to live longer. Granted, there's certain pollutants now that don't let us live as long, but I feel that mentally and physically, you can go longer.
And obviously you brought up the nation there a second ago. Ain't No Mystery, that tune really attacks the idea of the mystery god, which yeah. you talked about in some of the notes we did before. I was curious if you ever gotten pushback from fans of yours, who maybe are religious.
From family members, like they was like, well, you, Derek, you were raised Christian, and this and that. I was like, yeah, I was raised Christian, but I understand it was something better. I felt that, my mother and father, Dolores and William Murphy, they birthed me, and they was honorable people. And, my mother's a Christian to the fullest and this and that, and I respect her views. But a lot of times, my thinking upon that was like, it's hard for me to have faith in something that I can't really see. Like, they always tell you to have faith, but then you see accounts of these preachers that get congregations and take all the money from the congregations. Now, they got the big house, and they got a Cadillac, and they're flying across the country, and they got a private plane. Meanwhile, it's people in the church that are starving, and this and that. And I'm like, what part of the game is that? Like, what part of God told you that you deserve to get this much money and a plane to fly across the country while the people that you're supposed to be leading is starving? See, that's the nation of Islam. We air like sea alike. You understand? If my brother don't have nothing, then I don't have nothing. If I got something, then my brother got something. You know what I'm saying? They tell you, the Christian religion, have faith. Okay, the cable bill is due tomorrow. They say they're going to turn off the cable. Have faith. I'm having faith that the cable bill gonna get paid. Or am I gonna get out there and do something to make this cable bill get paid? Have faith will leave me evicted in my apartment. The nation of God on earth told me, get out there and do something to go get that money to come back to pay that bill.
So on the tune Rockus Set, you talk about slow down becoming a hit, right? And it's this sort of process. What was it like to experience that, to see that song kind of pick up momentum? Like, was there a moment where you realized, hey, this is a real hit that people are listening to?
Well, see, back then, man, when we first came out with the album, I think we dropped off one. We might have dropped that in November. It didn't really start to hit until like March or April.
Yeah.
It took a while for it to generate, because I was like, damn, maybe this ain't it. And then like all of a sudden, people start getting with it, and I was hearing a little more. Then we got a show offer. I remember the first show offer we did was South Carolina State University, and we did a show. And then somebody else called us for a show. Then Rutgers University called us for a show. And then so we started doing shows, and I was like, well, damn, maybe it's starting to happen. Then, see, when we came out, at first, I just wanted to be big on my block. Then after I wanted to be big in the school. Then after the school, I said, well, maybe if I could be big in my school, I could be big in the block. Then after the block, I was like, well, maybe I can just be big in New York. It just overwhelmed me. I was like, people in South Carolina want us to come to do a show down there? They don't know about Brand New Being, but somehow they knew, and it grew from there, man.
That's incredible. So that group has such a great chemistry. If you had to put it into words, what do you think each member brings?
Well, I think that Poobah, you know, Poobah was always the one with the catchiest phrases and stuff, and he works for, he put Tommy Hilfiger on the map. That's why Andy and them used to send us boxes of Hilfiger stuff.
Boxes, really?
Boxes and boxes. To this day, Andy's cool still. Andy, I need to get to the store and go on them leathers too. But anyway, you know, Andy used to give us a whole bunch of stuff, and Jamal was always swift with the math. Mathematics. How you see upon a day's degree, God? I see upon a day's degree. How you see upon the 1 to 36, God? I see upon the day. How you see in the 1 to 14? You understand? It wasn't just about seeing degrees with the God. Back then, with the gods, you have to know, all right, God, how you see upon a day's degree? I see, what's the day of the day? The 13th? Today's the 13th? 14th. I see upon a day's degree as knowledge, culture, freedom, all being born in power, finding. Then you be like, well, God, how you see upon a day's degree in the 12 jewels? Or how you see upon a day's degree in the 1 to 14, 1 to 36, or 1 to 4, these different things. Jamal was always swift with all that. All that, like boom, bang, bing, bang, boom, boom, boom. It was like a computer brain. And that's what the God brain, definitely. Him and I make a mission of the God Sincere. A lot of people don't really mention the God Sincere with Brand New Wind, but the God Sincere was a very instrumental point, especially in the Nation of God's Nerves point. Because he definitely, him and Poobah, they wrote the Wake Up Joint. You know what I'm saying? Like he added on to that, definitely.
And what did you bring to it?
I just bought myself and to the album. I just think I bought my voice in an off-pace style of rhyming, I think.
That's actually something I wanted to get into. You have obviously a very unique style and voice. Like, where did that develop from?
I don't know, man. It just came, man. It was like,
was it fully formed? Like when you first started writing rhymes, was it kind of similar?
I don't think I don't think Jay liked my voice at first. Like Jazzy Jay, I don't think Jay liked. He was like, yo, I don't know, but your man right here. I remember the first time I went to Pete's crib, Pete Rock, because that's when Pete was still in the basement. Pete Rogers, left guard, Mount Vernon High School football team. But, you know, I remember, like, Pete, like, I don't think Pete liked me the first time. He's like, yo, Poobah, who's your man right there? He was like, yo, that's my man right here. So, got cool with Pete from that, you know what I'm saying? C.L. Smooth, third grade, Daniel Webster School, New Rochelle, New York.
Wow. In Smoking on the Low, you talk about how you said once was a college boy. We were talking about this a little bit off camera. You kind of went to a few different schools and stuff. What was your experience in college? And then I remember reading something about you saying at one point a few years ago that you wanted to kind of get back to graduate school and stuff.
Yeah, well, I do want to get back, man, because, see, with me with school it was never, the work was never the problem. I'm versed from Nishti to Tolstoy. I mean, we can go back to Eli Whistles, The Night. I mean, I'm versed on a lot of things. I'm knowing a lot of things. I read. I'm a voracious reader. I read a lot of things. So it was never the schoolwork. It was just getting to the school. That was the problem. Getting to the school. Like, when they say you get involved, when you get absorbed into college life,
yeah,
that was me. I definitely, at that age, I got involved in the college life, and it was a whirlwind for me. And if I had to do it again, I wouldn't change a thing. But I do want to go back just for the simple fact of, man, that I try to tell these kids nowadays that I saw something on 60 Minutes yesterday where they have a factory in Massachusetts where instead of employing 200 people, they have these computers that they've actually made a grid where these computers take order. Like, you can be here and take an order. The computer will fill that order, and it'll go on a grid and give it to you. And they've got it on the ground where they don't need the workers no more. And I'm like, motherfucker. I'm like, wow. I'm like, that's the first step right there. They don't need the workers no more. I'm like, this is a factory that could have employed, and the dude said it. He said, I could have employed 200 people, but instead I got these 15 computers that's running around on this grid now. So, yo, shit is crazy, man. What's up?
Definitely. There was a, I have to ask, one of the things you said that always puzzled me was, on Feel So Good, you say you used to live in Saudi Arabia. Was that being playful? Or
yeah, was that just being playful, just with rap, man, just throwing something out there, man, something I've heard, whatever. That was just part of the joint.
There was a lot on that first Brand Nubian record, especially, it had a very, very playful feel. Yeah. I feel like it was very common at that time. I talked to AG about this, the same thing on the first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, on that first drum, we was coming from Nurse Shell, man. There was times we was taking the Metro North train downtown where we had enough money to get downtown to the studio where we was like, listen, going back to Nurse Shell, we're going to have to go to 42nd Street, maybe take the Metro North train or whatever we 125th and hide in the bathroom and hope we can at least get to Mount Vernon, where I know if I got kicked off in the train to Mount Vernon, I can walk to New Rochelle from there. You know what I'm saying? So it was where we were sharing 40s. I remember they had the cheesesteak spot downtown where we was at Calliope Studio. It was a brotherhood, man. That was like Gladiator School.
There's one more question about the first record. I was re-listening to it, you know, prepare for this, and I saw on Drop the Bomb, there's this really vicious critique of the welfare state, of AFDC and stuff. What was going on with that? What were you thinking at the time? Is your opinion changed?
I think, man, that being that my mother worked at in the Bronx, BCW, in the welfare office for 25 years, and my father ran the East Harlem office for 30 years, the welfare state, man, it was a good thing that it gave aid, but it was a bad thing because now you've created a generational system of people that rely on welfare. You understand? If you go into the hood and you see most people that are on welfare, their parents was on welfare, their grandparents was on welfare, where sometimes it's created a false sense of security and like, well, I know I'm gonna get this welfare. Yeah, you're gonna get the welfare, but look at the substandard living conditions they're gonna keep you in, where it's been a continuous situation where, I don't know, I just felt maybe like the system could be changed somehow, man. Like, I just think that the way it was set up, it's set up for you to be relied, that you have to rely on that, man, and it's a generational effect that's become behind this welfare system.
So moving up to speed today, you have the new record. Yeah. Really, really fantastic. What was the process of making that like?
Well, I mean, it was the name of the record is Love Hella Right. That's in the 5%. That's one of our things. In order to love, you must go through hell to become right. And this is just a culmination of years of Sadat X. You understand? Going through loving it, then going through hell with rap, and then becoming right again with it. Because everybody, if anybody who's been in a period of rap like I have for this long has loved it, has went through a period where they hated it, been disgruntled by it, and if you were able to stay around, have loved it again. You understand what I'm saying? And it's not many of us, but the ones who have stuck it out are the gladiators at it.
And a lot of those people actually appear on the record.
Yeah.
You have the collaborations. And even on G-Lanes, you address that specifically. That you have collaborations, and sometimes they don't work. Sometimes they seem forced.
Yeah. Suppose a collab supposed to be fab. Off the rip, it should grab. You know what I'm saying? Off the rip, I should feel like, yo, these two dudes got some type of chemistry. You hear a lot of these collabs nowadays, and you'd be like, well, this dude said this. And this dude said, this don't sound like they had no type of cohesiveness or anything. Those are the ones you can tell are the email joints. I'm going to do a verse and I'm going to send it to you. And then you do a verse and you lay on it for about 2 weeks. And then I hit you, yo, I really need that verse back. And now, okay, I'm going to send you the verse back. And that's what it's become now, where back in the days, a collab, you had to be in the studio with the dude. Y'all had to be there. Me and Ella Sensei have a collab album coming out where 90% of the songs, we was there with each other. That was the basis of us making the collab album. I was like, well, Ella, if we're going to make a collab album, let's be there together. Let's not just make it be an email thing.
I think you have a great, speaking of chemistry, you have a great chemistry with Lori, who's one of my favorites.
Yeah, my boy.
What's your relationship with him like?
Well, Nori, going back, was a prodigy of Akinelli. I remember doing shows with Akinelli when it was me, Akinelli, Exhibit, where he would bring Nori. And you know, he don't smoke no weed or nothing. But Nori know that we smoke weed. So he knock on the, yo, y'all got some weed, boom, bang, boom. And Nori was connected with my dudes in the Bronx, MU. So me, I done had always a good connection with Nori. Good dude, love him to death. Big Uncle Wise, all them dudes out there love them dudes.
And I feel like you guys have another connection in that, unlike a lot of rappers, you guys aren't afraid to be funny.
Nah, not at all, man. Like, that's part of the thing, man. Like, I don't know, man. Like,
Your reference Clan of the Cave Bear or something?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, man. Like, somehow, like, rap got to, like, a real, like, super hard stage where dudes couldn't be funny no more and have fun. And that's what was whack about it, man. And that's, I feel like a lot of some of the young dudes has come back with the funness of it again, man. Like, it was fun. We started off as fun. I shouldn't have to go to a club and everybody being like, okay, you got a table over there, y'all got a bottle service table.
And that's where our audio recorder ran out of space, so we had to switch audio sources to the video camera we were using. The audio quality isn't as good, but the rest of the interview was too good to pass up. If you want to see more of what he had to say about his own work, you can visit his Rap Genius verified account at rapgenius.com/SadatX. And now, back to our interview with SadatX.
So now, everybody's drinking around their table, and we're looking at each other, and everybody, you got 5 bottles on the table, y'all got five bottles, five dudes is dancing, three girls. It's corny now, that's corny. That's what fucked up kind of rap in New York, I think, too, that table service shit. Because now, you gotta come into the club, you forced to get, oh, you wanna get a table, but you gotta get a minimum of 4 or 5 bottles. I'm like, yo, man, what part of the game is that?
Yeah, definitely. In order to wind down, just ask you one or two more things. Definitely. So you've been, one of the main things you've been doing now is the True Wine Connoisseur show. You guys can't see it, but we polished off a bottle of wine.
Yeah, we got here. One down, one is down.
How'd that get started?
Well, what happened was, man, I was down with my man Will Tell. You understand? And basically, when I had gotten in trouble and I came back home, I was incarcerated for a minute. Sure. So when I came back, you know, Will Tell, he was like, no, I'm going to provide you with a place to come do your thing. And actually what it was is, we used to just drink Hennessy. And like...
brown water.
Yeah, brown water. And it's like, if you drink a Hennessy and smoke, after a while, man, that shit gets on your back, yo.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it takes the best of you. I was like, well, listen, we need to start finishing these songs. What can we do to finish the songs? And I remember one day, we ran out of brown water, and he had a bottle of wine. Nobody felt like going to the liquor store. But we was like, yeah, fuck it, let's drink the wine. So we drank the wine, and it was more on a casual thing, and it's smoother. And, you know, we wanted to break down stereotypes about wine, because for years, wine drinkers have been thought to be real stiff and, you know, break it down. And wine is a great thing, man.
Excellent. So something I've kind of always wondered... petty people. You have this whole conceit of like dissing people who lip sync, dissing people who can't perform live. And it was kind of a little bee in my bonnet, a little something back in my head. It was like, is he talking about anyone in particular?
No, I wasn't talking about anybody in particular. I was just talking about, man, just being real with it, man. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not, like, see, a lot of times, like, all right, I went to go see Rick Ross in Atlanta. You know what I'm saying? And maybe he don't do this all the time, but for that time, I went to see it, and, you know, he was rhyming over the lyrics. Then in the middle of rhyming over the lyrics, I guess one of his mans was on stage. He turns around, and his man is having a conversation while the song is going on. And I'm like, well, damn, son, you going to do the song or talk to your man? Like, what is it, yo? I've been paid to get him a man throughout red. Now you talking to your man, the lyrics is going on. I felt kind of disrespected by that. And I'm like, yo, when I come to see a show, I want to see you do the show, not hear the record with the words. I'm like, yo, that ain't that. That wasn't part of the code, man. Like, whoever took made that part of the code, take that, uncode that part.
And finally, you got, you know, from, you know, when you're brand newbie in the beginning of your career, you guys were at the very forefront of this kind of conscious, for lack of a better word, I don't know, no one really likes that word, but it's an era of hip-hop, and that's not really around so much these days.
Because the powers that be were scared of that. Whenever you tell somebody to stand up against something, that worries somebody. You understand what I'm saying? Like, when you tell somebody, yo, stop being deaf, dumb, and blind and understand yourself. But people that's been feeding the deaf, dumb, and blind, they're like, yo, we're not cool with that. That's not going to make us the money no more. When it came down, when people killing each other rap, that was a money maker for them. Yeah, throw that out. Yeah, you don't like this, throw that out. It wasn't cool to be like, let me speak with my brother and let's be cool together. Oh, that ain't gonna make no money for us. Now they're cool. Now that don't make no money. Now it's no beef now. Now they're friends. Oh no, that's whack. You know what I'm saying? So that, you know, beef and controversy, and especially in this country in America, is always so. I mean, this country was based on war and taking shit from people. You know what I'm saying? So that's the American way. No doubt. Ask the Indians that. You see how they boxed them in. They say, y'all have these maybe 7 or 8 places to stay, and y'all go do that. We're going to supply y'all with alcohol and this and that and watch y'all down for them. And that's what's happening.
And I think tied into that whole dynamic was something about, like, when you guys came out, there were a lot of people who said, oh, they're anti-white.
Yeah, anti-white. No, we was never anti-white. But I went to school with some of the greatest Italian dudes in the world, man. Allerton Avenue, over there in Little Italy, behind Fordham Road. So it was never that. It was just at the time we came out, a lot of our brothers was in such a state of disarray, but we had to save them first. We was like, yo, y'all already good. Y'all don't need us. These is the brothers that need us, and these is where our message is directed to.
Yeah. I guess my question about that is, do you feel like any of the people who brought that stuff up knew it wasn't true, like knew what you were about, but kind of said it anyway?
I don't know, because I think that a lot of them were just ignorant to the nation of God's word. They had never heard of this. And like, because if you know, Electric Slip, at first we had the Wake Up video out there. They didn't know. They let it go out there. And
really?
And this
out
happened
for a while?
Yeah, it was out for a while. Then somebody got a message and was like, what? This is what it means? Oh, no, yank that. Bring that back. Right. We got to do an edit on that and then change it. They just were so oblivious.
For our listeners who haven't seen it, can you explain the original cut of the video?
The original cut of the video, we had a guy who was dressed up as a devil. He was in white face as the devil. And, you know, people, they didn't understand that at first. And you know, Electra let it slip out there. But once, I guess somebody schooled him. Somebody went and did an early Google search or some type of early background search. It was like, hey, this is not so cool. This might be directed towards us. And granted, some of the lyrical content maybe in some of the lessons will lead you to believe that, but it's always an option in our lessons. You know what I'm saying? It's always a show and prove. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't like that, man. And I think a lot of people ran towards the racial aspect of it. Because what's Isaiah? But you know, it was always that racial aspect.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And finally, I think that obviously your connection with the gods and earth goes pretty deep. What do you think the connection is between rap and hip hop artists and the gods? Like, is there something about the beliefs or the way you have to kind of memorize stuff or spit stuff back, or the sort of show and prove session?
Well, yeah, that was always good for mine. For mental preparation, for you to know them lessons, show that you could mentally.
Now, these numbers
where numbers was infinity, and it was for your mental preparation. Where I knew that some people who were deemed some of the gods who were deemed incorrigible or who couldn't learn, when they learned them lessons, that spark of greatness that came from their mind was so deep, and how they were twisted around where it made them feel so great when it was God.
Incredible. So finally, anything you're working on now that you like to tell us about? Love Hella Right, obviously.
Okay, well, I got the Love Hella Right project. That's out right now. We got a True Wine album. True Wine Connoisseurs album is coming out January 21st. We got the Sean Black album coming out. That's going to be called The Soloist. You know what I'm saying? Jamie Foxx, The Soloist. If y'all haven't seen The Soloist, this is my man Black. He's similar to that.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah, we're trying to get that to that. And I'm just going to continue working. I got the album coming out with Elvis Sensei. You know what I'm saying? I got a project coming out with Ayatollah, Diamond D. You know what I'm saying? I'm constantly, my man Focus. So I'm constantly working and staying in this because in order to be in this, especially at my age and how I am, you got to stay sharp. Can't have a fallback too long because this is a rap is very fickle. It's a what can you do for me now, whatever you've done lately type of thing. And if you're not in it, then you're not going to win it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming by Rap Genius.
Yeah,
really appreciate it.
Definitely. I appreciate it. That's what it is.
That was our conversation with Sadat X. If you enjoyed it, go to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast, and also give us a review while you're there. The more 5-star reviews we get, the easier it is to keep on getting amazing guests like Sadat X. Outside the Lines with Rap Genius is created and written by Sean Sotero, aka Same Old Sean. The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
He was in 9th grade, we was in 12th grade. He was already the best player on the team.
This interview was recorded by Aaron Vasquez. Our show's intern is Sunny Kahara, and our theme music is by Psionic. The webmaster of the upcoming OutsideTheLinesPodcast.com is Paul Dice. Keep an eye out for it. Please join us next week on Outside the Lines with Rap Genius when we talk to the incredible Big Daddy Kane.